this is Dr. Demento, and you are listening to the KBOO News, the only news you need.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. As of this recording on May 6th, we are well into the 2025 Oregon legislative session, and I, like many others, am still struggling to find a coherent through line to the session. And many climate justice advocates are increasingly wondering whether Oregon's Democratic-led government has just given up on meaningful climate action and so many other progressive priorities. But there is still a lot that can happen in the next 2 months of the legislative session, and your voice really does matter. To walk me through where things stand and where we as citizens can make the greatest impact for the rest of this session, I'm joined by my old boss, State Representative Mark Gamba. Mark Gamba represents Oregon's House District 41, which encompasses Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. He is also one of Oregon's most outspoken climate advocates and one of my favorite returning guests. As always, if you appreciate Coast Range Radio, which is now completely independent, please help me out by recommending or sharing an episode or two with a couple friends. We are on community radio stations throughout the state, and we are ad-free on all podcast apps. The show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Please drop me a line anytime and let me know what you think of the show. Okay, Mark Gamba, welcome back to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way.
I might not by the end of the one.
Let's just start with a quick mid-session temperature check. How are you feeling about the session in general? You know, how does it compare to previous ones you've been involved in? What comes up for you right now?
Broadly speaking, it's been frustrating. And weird. And it's not just me. Sometimes you wonder if you're just inside your own head with things like that. But I've had this conversation with a lot of my fellow legislators and with lobbyists. And they're like, yeah, this is one of the weirdest sessions I've ever been through. So there's lots of potential reasons why that is. I can speak to the ones that are pretty clear to me. And they go a little bit to the question you are asking about why with a double supermajority and a trifecta, which is, you know, a lot of states strive to have the House and the governor all be Democrats, and then they get a lot of work done. We not only have that, we have supermajorities in both chambers, and yet we're getting virtually very little to nothing done on climate and environment. Some really good bills have died. Some other bills have been watered down badly, and some really bad bills have passed, at least out of committees. So far, I don't think any of them have made it all the way out of the building. I think the reason is that we have this giant transportation package that we have to get passed this year. And I need to unpack that for you a little bit if you want to understand kind of the why.
Absolutely. Let's just dive right in. So you're talking about the transportation package, and that is one of the three committees that you sit on, is the transportation, as well as housing and climate and energy. So what is going on with this transportation package?
So we got to take you back a few years. So Oregon predominantly funds its transportation work through gas tax. There's some other little, ancillary revenue sources, but predominantly it's gas tax and then the weight mile tax for the trucks. We do the same thing in the state that a lot of cities and counties do, and probably other states do, which I always think is a mistake, in that we set taxes or fees and then we don't index them to inflation. And I call it indexing them to reality. Inflation is always going to occur. Back in 2017, the last time they did this, they did all the calculations and they knew that in order to keep ODOT whole, to keep it continuing to upgrade our bridges or replace bridges as necessary and pave all the roads and do the fog lines, all the things that they do that we need them to do, that we depend on, that we kind of take for granted, that they needed to raise the gas tax at that time 70 cents. And they chose to raise them a dime. And ever since then, we've seen record inflation, particularly in construction. It's been more like 15% year over year in construction. So you can imagine how far in the hole, so to speak, we are now, 7 years later. So we have to pass a significant bill that brings in a significant amount of revenue. Does that all have to be gas tax? No. There are some concepts around ways that we can collect from EVs and hybrids. There are concepts around making Amazon pay some things, stuff like that. So we can spread the pain a little bit, but by and large, you know, the taxpayers are going to have to come up with more money. So this is where the politics come in.
Right.
So we recently had a death. Senator Woods passed recently, sadly, which means that there is no longer a supermajority in the Senate. So just based on that alone, we're going to need a few Republican votes. That gets us back into politics. And further, I think leadership is very, very nervous about the Democrats owning a big tax increase, and it will have to be significant, and not having the Republicans also on the hook for that. So that is what gets us into what I think is the biggest reason that the year has been so weird. We are spending a lot of effort, time, and what otherwise would I would consider poor decision making based on trying to appease Republicans on the hopes that we can get a handful of them to vote for whatever the package ends up being.
We could talk about this for the whole interview, and we can talk more about the transportation package if you want. But I do want to make sure that we're doing a couple things in this conversation. Is one, tying things back to climate, the environment, at least to some degree. And sure. This also ties into something that's been on my mind a lot lately. Not to sound like a lib, but I don't know if you've read the Ezra Klein, Derek Thompson book, Abundance, yet. But it's
on my list.
Yeah, fantastic book. And it really has me thinking about some of the issues we have here in Oregon. You know, we have a Democratic-led state, fancies itself very progressive, and yet we just have this backlog of issues, you know, not enough housing, roads that aren't being maintained properly. And we have this, from just speaking personally, we have this lack of visionary leadership and that gumption to do these hard things and not just kind of try to kick the can down the road. Is there anyone in the building that is saying, look, if we're going to be doing this, these large transportation packages, whatever, like we have to be thinking bigger and bolder. Like it's not enough to just replace some of this infrastructure with interim solutions, but how can we be doing it in a way that furthers a lot of other objectives and speeds up some of these processes? So sorry to kind of be asking you like a real big overarching question, but I wonder if some of these conversations are even being had in the building.
Yes, those conversations are being had. Senator Pham, Senator Golden, Rep Neron, myself, a handful of others are having those conversations, and we are trying to move the Overton window, if you will, in that direction. I wouldn't disagree with your description of there being, it seems insulting to say a lack of vision.
Fair.
But certainly something in that direction, particularly when it does come to climate and the environment, we tend in this building, that is the first thing we trade away. In almost every instance.
Yep.
The first thing that goes out the window is climate and the environment. And then the second thing is things that poor people need.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, it's like the bills that I've had that have died this year have been all in those realms. And I think some of what's happening is, you know, those are going to be controversial bills, and they don't want to piss off the Republicans for the reason that I gave earlier. This is why I wanted to go through that whole thing earlier, because it all keeps coming back to that, as near as I can tell.
Yeah.
But in the transportation package specifically, that group of us and some others are pushing for a variety of things, a dramatic increase in what we spend on safe routes to school, a dramatic increase in the Great Streets programs, some money towards rail, some money towards e-bike subsidies for low-income folks, some money towards off-road paths and trails, electric school bus program, some charging infrastructure, you know, a lot of things in those realms would move the needle on climate, on our GHG from transmission. You know, obviously transportation is 35% of our greenhouse gases in Oregon. So if we can move the needle on that, that's a pretty significant thing. And obviously transit is a huge piece of that. So increasing transit capacity, transit frequency, transit reliability, all of those things will cause more people to use the transit, give more people the opportunity to use transit, which then reduces single occupancy vehicles.
I do want to make sure that we get to at least a lightning round of some of the bills that you think that our listeners should be tracking. And then you had also sponsored a number of other interesting bills. So again, we don't have time to get into all of them, but if you have any that you think are of particular relevance to our listeners, climate, energy, environment, forests, especially ones that may have a chance and that people can weigh in on.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to touch on the thing that I spent the last 2 years working on, which is transmission.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We brought initially four bills, pared it down to three right at the get-go. Two of them have passed out of the House and are awaiting hearings in the Senate. One of them died in the House, and that was the most critical one in my view. We were just having a conversation with PUC in my office just before this started.
That's the Public Utilities Commission.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. It's acronym soup in this building.
Yeah, no problem.
And, you know, we were discussing the likelihood of rolling blackouts in Oregon, probably broader than Oregon, but certainly in Oregon in the coming years. And there are a lot of people at the PUC who are pretty convinced that we may see those as early as this summer. You mentioned it earlier, the electrical load growth projected out. We should see a 30% load growth in the next 10 years and about 100% load growth over the next 30 years are the numbers I've seen. And our transmission system is at capacity. There are also more than 60 utility scale solar arrays in eastern and central Oregon ready to go. They have the land, they have the money, they're ready to go. They do not have capacity on the transmission system, so they cannot get a permit. So we are not building those. So here we have energy production ready to go, clean energy production, but we can't utilize it because we don't have the transmission.
And so in kind of layperson terms, what is holding that back? Why are we not able to build these transmission lines fast enough to keep up? And how do your bills hope to address that?
Yeah. So there's one transmission line that's under development right now. They started it in 2007. If we're very lucky, they might start construction this year. So permitting and planning are horrific. You have to go through the federal process for a line that long. You've gone through federal land, no doubt. So you're now in FERC process, and then you have to go through the state process, the FSEC process. Those two just by themselves on that particular project have taken 12 years. And then all the lawsuits at the end of each one of those processes from the people who don't want to see a transmission line on their horizon or in their backyard or whatever the situation is. So we have three bills, like I said. One is a permitting bill that tries to cut some of that red tape, tries to reduce a little bit of the permitting time. Our original goal was to cut it down a quarter of the time that it's currently taking. That at this juncture is pretty impossible, partly because Oregon's process is a land use process and the federal process is a environmental review and it's more flexible, but a land use process you have to define the piece of land you're talking about. So if in the federal process you determine, oh, gee, we got to move the line north a mile right in this spot because there's this critical habitat or something like that. Well, that means you've just started the FSEC process all over because now you're talking about a new piece of land. And it's a ridiculous process, but it is what we're stuck with now. That is to be continued. But so the permitting bill is going to the Senate. It should cut 10 to 15% of the time it takes, which I get is feels like nothing. Then the other bill is GET, grid enhancing technology. So it's both software and then replacing the actual lines themselves with new lines that can carry more energy, that don't sag, that are less likely to start fires. That bill is kind of a stopgap. That's a way for us to push more energy through the existing system. So that might buy us a few years if we get everyone to lean in.
This is one of those issues that is not front of mind for a lot of people, but it is one of those things that's so important that we really have to deal with. So I'm glad that you are doing some of the hard work around that. That brings up something for me that I wanted to talk with you about that is involved in a lot of this, which is the part that environmental and conservation groups can play in slowing some of this stuff down. You know, I absolutely do not want to be overly critical of my colleagues in the conservation and environmental world. Obviously, the fossil fuel industry has put us here. But I think that there's this concept called trade-off denialism. And I wonder if you have heard of that. And I wonder if you think, if you're encountering opposition from the environmental and conservation movement in some of this stuff, like some of those lawsuits you're talking about, where these organizations are coming down, because I'm seeing personally a lot of this, well, we want this clean energy revolution, but we don't want to see any of the negative consequences in getting there.
Yeah. Everything from mining lithium to new transmission lines to even big giant solar arrays, you know, because that's where the sage grouse like to mate or whatever. Yes.
Which is important. We want sage grouse to mate.
We want sage grouse to mate, absolutely. But you're 100% right. It is a big deal. And I think it's been very close to home in this work because, you know, PGE is trying to expand the transmission capacity on their own right of way through Forest Park. And they're getting a lot of pushback because they have to cut down a bunch of trees. So I've tried to stay out of that one because I don't need the grief from either side. But it's exactly what you're talking about. It is kind of a classic example. It's environmentalists stopping new transmission. And they're saying, well, you could put it someplace else. Yes, everybody always wants it to be someplace else. It is literally the definition of not in my backyard.
Yeah. So as someone who I know personally cares so deeply about not only the climate, but also just our local environment. You do care about conservation issues and wildlife and habitat. And so how do you think about balancing the need to conserve what's left? You know, we've already lost so much and we need to acknowledge that. But also there's no path to a renewable energy future without some of these consequences. So how do you personally, as someone in the trenches in the legislature, think about balancing those?
Well, and this is the conversation I've had with a lot of the sort of hardcore environmental groups. I'm like, look, I get that we want to protect the sage grouse. I get that we don't want to cut any more trees. But if we do not transition to 100% renewables, all of the sage grouse and all of the trees are going to burn. Right? They will all be dead, not just that utility right-of-way that we need to cut or that solar array that we need to put in. They'll all be dead. And that kind of makes a lot of them sit back and think, because I get it, you know, environmentalists have been on defense forever, right? That's all we've ever been able to do is just try and stop more bad crap from happening. We're at the moment, and I suspect this is a lot of what this the book you're talking about leans into, we're at a moment where we need to be saying yes to a lot of things. We need to be leaning into a lot of things so that we can solve the bigger overarching problem so that we can protect the things we care about. And I would argue, start the process of restoring, but that's obviously a very long multi-generational play. But we have to be doing those things, and we have to get our energy system completely transitioned to electric. So there are going to be trade-offs, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered the question.
I don't think there is a perfect answer to the question. If there was, then I think we would be writing a book about it. I mean, this is one of the questions of our generation and for our movement writ large. How do we grapple with some of these really hard questions that we have to grapple with? And I will say, in defense of folks who I might say have some trade-off denialism in some areas, also the skepticism just keeps getting reinforced over and over again. Like, you look at what is happening on the federal level at quote-unquote forest reform on federal forests. And so you start talking about reforming things like the National Environmental Policy Act, which is one of the main tools that environmentalists use to sue over timber sales. And as soon as you start talking about reforming that, well, they're basically trying to use that as a backdoor way to gut all environmental review on federal forests. So there's it's kind of this intertwined problem of there's no credibility from the authorities. They have not earned this credibility that they're asking for. And in fact, they keep setting any credibility that they might earn on fire. And so it's a really thorny problem of how do we get folks like you, folks like ConFam, so many of the great legislators that are working really hard to build progressive power in power quick enough so that we can have some people in power with credibility. And then how do we also, as an environmental movement, wrestle with those hard questions of, if we aren't willing to sacrifice some more now, then we sacrifice much more down the road.
For sure.
But yeah, I don't think there's a perfect answer to that.
Yeah, I've been nodding the whole time you've been talking, and I realize it's radio, so I probably need to say I 100% agree that what's happening at the federal level is catastrophic to the degree that the various lawsuits can't stop them. This a second Trump administration where he seems to have evil geniuses at his beck and call couldn't come at a worse time. We're literally at a point where we should be leaning hard into solving for climate change.
I would love to keep talking with you about this, and maybe we can circle back to it in a minute. But I also just want to make sure that we cover all the ground that I was hoping to cover. And one of the things that I want to ask is, how would you recommend that folks listening engage in the session for the remainder of the session? Are there any bills that you are excited about that could really benefit from public engagement, or any really bad bills that need people speaking out against them?
There's definitely some bad bills. There's a bill that would allow Umatilla County to vote to have a nuclear power plant that probably wants to die. Not that I am, I'm not one of those people who just out of hand dismisses nuclear. It is not a solution to the current climate, to the climate crisis, because even the small modular nukes are too slow and too expensive. It's much faster and much easier and much cheaper to build wind and solar. So hence the transmission lines. So that bill really wants to die. So some effort there. But I think the big move that we have left is the transportation package. If we can cause that to be as green as we can possibly make it. So if every single one of your listeners would write to the co-chairs of that committee and leadership to say, this is really, really important to us that you make significant, not little pat on the heads. Here you go, nice hippie. Here's your $5 million towards this thing that we should be spending $200 million on, but real significant money towards the kinds of things that are going to reduce our GHG in the transportation realm. That is really big right now.
Just on that point, is there an organization that people can easily look up where they can find some talking points, figure out who the co-chairs are or their personal representative is? Where do people go, aside from just directing them to the Oregon Legislature website?
Well, there is a coalition that's called Move Oregon Forward. It's moveoregonforward.org. So if you go to their website, that's the coalition we've been coordinating with on the concepts that we're pushing. But I do think individual emails or written letters or phone calls to the four people who are responsible for the decision making. I mean, I'm pushing as hard as I can, but I ultimately am not a decision maker. It will be leadership. So the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, and then the two co-chairs of the Joint Transportation Committee are the ones that really need to hear that Oregonians, A, care very much about the environment, and they are watching, and they need to see significant shifts in the way we are managing our transportation system, and B, that they are okay with paying more taxes in order to do that. Because this is the rub, right? Everything we need to do is going to cost money. The money has to come from somewhere. Thus far, no one has figured out how to make Elon Musk pay for it all.
I think we're going to have to more or less leave it there, unfortunately. So before I let you go, is there anything we've missed or anything that you want to make sure gets included in the discussion?
Yeah, I mean, this is a broader thing, but it's worth saying, and it's worth saying a lot to a lot of different people. A lot of people think that if you elect the Democrat, you've just elected somebody that cares about the climate and the environment. And I am here to tell you that that is absolutely, positively not the case. we need to be vetting our Democrats better and ensuring that the people that we are electing in the primaries are environmentalists, are that is, if not their absolute top focus, like it is for me, at least it's their number two focus. Because we're thin on the ground in this building. I swear to God, there's like five of us, six of us that I could describe that way. And that is not enough people to bend the needle.
Wise words. We didn't actually get into the Environmental Rights Amendment, which I know that a lot of our listeners will be interested in. And we didn't have time to talk about the Climate Superfund, but people can look up what happened with that bill. Maybe there will be an effort to revive some version of it that we can talk about in the future. But real quick, is the Environmental Rights Amendment still alive? And not just technically, but is that moving or not?
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. Neither one of them. One is technically still alive, but the word from the Senate, they're both in the Senate, is that unless the advocates can prove that we've got the financial backing to help get it passed, because both of them are referrals to the voters, and we know for a fact that the oil and gas industry will spend unlimited amounts of money defeating both of those. They want proof that if we're going to take this vote and piss off the Republicans, which will absolutely piss off the Republicans, that we can get it passed at the ballot. And thus far, there has been no entity that stepped up and said, yes, we're willing to commit, you know, $5 million or $10 million to getting that bill passed when it goes to voters.
Yeah. Well, that might be one last plug to get involved in the legislative session. I encourage folks listening to just always be in occasional contact with your House representatives, your state senators, all your elected officials, and you can find out about bills that are happening. You can find out who your legislator is. All of that information and more is just at OregonLegislature.gov. There's a ton of information there, and there's actually even videos on that website that explain how to use the website. So again, that's OregonLegislature.gov. Definitely a great resource. I really encourage all the listeners to engage in the legislative session. Whether we get the bills that we want passed or not, it's really important as citizens to be making a ruckus and making our voices heard. For sure. So anything to add before I let you go?
Nope. Just thank you to your listeners, and I will double down on the encouragement to engage with the legislature and frankly with the executive, right? Send the governor letters. She's a very powerful person. She can set the tone for what this state does. And I think she's very focused on housing, rightly so. It's a big problem, but I think we can walk and chew gum. So I think we could be solving for climate as we are also solving for housing.
Well, Representative Mark Gamba, it is always such a joy to talk with you, even when the conversation is a little bleak. So happy to have good folks like you fighting the good fight. Please keep it up, and thank you so much for your work. Thanks for joining me today.
Of course, anytime.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent production. If you like the show, please help me grow the audience by telling your friends about it, following Coast Range Radio on Instagram, and just text a link to the episode from our podcast feed to a friend or two. Once again, the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out anytime. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. Let's make it through this together.
Greetings, I'm Ansa Craiglin.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donald Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to Community Radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
KBOO Portland.
What is that terrible racket?
It's Radio Lost and Found on every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Thank you.